Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from The Scarlet Threads, Part 4. We've been tracing the history of a mystery called Babylon all the way through the Bible, all the way through history. And now we're in the 20th century, watching the rise of communism and wondering what in the world could this mystery called Babylon have anything to do with that? Well, following World War I, the attention of the world is directed to Orthodox Tsarist Russia. It must be noted that the Tsar and the Orthodox Church are as united as the Holy Roman Emperor and the Catholic Church. They're a mirror image of what is happening in the other leg of Babylon, Rome. You remember, I hope, that Orthodoxy, which is an ambitiously incorrect title for this group, Eastern Orthodox, nothing more than Catholicism's long-lost sister, cut off from Rome's blessing because of her refusal to recognize the Pope. There are some other minor differences, but Rome has a way of conciliating itself with all who will just bow the knee to Papa. Well, sister will not do that. At least not as of this writing and this speaking, though approaches are being made. Orthodoxy helps to make Russia the mess that it is at the turn of the century. The Tsar gets too much credit for this by the incoming communists. Those who begin to plan the overthrow of the Russian monarchy are well aware of the effects of religion on this vast nation, though, and their descendants wage a relentless war against what is thought to be worship of God, while the true worshipers secretly gather in homes and meet God every day. 1870 has already been noted as the year of the temporal losses of Rome, the year of papal infallibility. It's also the year in which Vladimir Lenin is born. Lenin, Marx, Engels, Stalin, the founders of communism are well known. A few further facts might be helpful. Some of communism's leaders were trained by the church. Church, you know, I'm using that in quotation marks, but Stalin, for example, studied for a time in the theological seminary of Tiflis. Some have gone so far as to say that communism is nothing more than a Christian heresy, a spin-off of our own faith. And it does have many Christian elements in it. But how would Satan deceive the world if he did not include truth with his errors? Communism has a decidedly un-Christian side. In fact, one could compare it to the greatest heresy of all, Romanism. Bernard Shaw called communism the lay form of Catholicism, which never had its lack of chaplains. And more, when one compares piece by piece the Vatican structure to the Moscow structure, lately defunct, of course, one begins to be suspicious of a single author to both groups' manuals. Consider the extensive use of the color red, the presence of a major hierarchy, the worship, essentially, of the top man, the priesthood of a select few who run everything, the blind zeal, the attempts at mind control, censorship, unquestioned obedience and loyalty. Blanchard, who I've quoted before, describes all of these items in his book. I would add anti-Semitism, anti-everything spiritual that is not proscribed and defined by the hierarchy. Well, just before the beginning of the Communist Revolution, the Secretary of State of the Vatican is heard to say, and I quote, "The victory of Tsarist Russia, to whom France and England have made so many promises, would constitute for the Vatican a disaster greater than the Reformation." End of quote. So, when Bolshevism communism, defeats the Tsar and its accompanying orthodoxy, of course. You know, when the Tsar was knocked out, so was the Eastern Orthodox Church in some many respects. Well, there was for a while great rejoicing in Rome when all that happened. Kerensky, the leader of the short-lived first communist government, even offered religious liberty. The hopes of the Vatican were really growing, but well, later things changed drastically. The church was thrown out, and Vatican Rome becomes the formidable enemy of Moscow. Something about like repelling like, perhaps. And so now the Vatican is the friend of democracy and the enemy of the Reds. Even the limited scope of my book here has answered that one. Blanchard will embellish that answer. I'm quoting, "The Vatican has always scorned democracy for itself, but it permits its priests to believe in a limited form as long as the power of the Vatican is not affected. The democracy of the U.S. or a dictatorship in Spain is equally acceptable if its attitude toward the Vatican remains positive. Likewise, democracy in Sweden and dictatorship in Poland has been denounced for reasons that negative attitudes toward the Vatican surfaced. The Vatican is on the democratic side only for the duration of the emergency because the Kremlin is on the other side." End of quote. Don't you find it interesting that Rome and the Babylonian way continue to prosper in our world, even with all of its setbacks? But communism, that we all feared so much, has practically gone out of business. Well, it had until recently. But God, through Daniel, foretold the constant prosperity of a world power. This is no accident. Rome, for over 2,000 years, has not been replaced by any attempted world domination. Look at Napoleon, Great Britain, Hitler, Mussolini, Hirohito, the communists. They're all dead, they're all gone, or limited. But Rome, one out of every five people on earth, gives at least lip service to this terrible beast that Daniel saw taking the reins from the Grecian period all the way until the end, and that John saw mounted by a lovely lady of the night. Rome becomes the great champion of freedom from communism. Rome, that tied the world in knots for hundreds of years, now decries the atrocities of Moscow, and Moscow eventually falls. Hear and understand. An enemy of our enemies is not necessarily our friend. Rome has also attacked and decried the American atrocities in their thinking. If it takes the election of a communist country pope to set in motion the domino effect that crippled the communist world in the 1980s and 90s, who might we expect to sit on the throne of Rome next? America and the Middle East continue to be thorns in the Vatican's side. Will the next pope come from one of these areas? Well, that question has been answered. Once more, I far surpassed the bounds of our present chapter to make a point. Let's go back now to the early years of the century, but reserve the right to discuss this matter again in a different setting. When we get back together, we'll be talking about a Mr. Al Smith, a Catholic candidate for president. Well, that was unheard of in the 1920s. We know what happened 40 years later, but back then it was something to talk about, and we'll talk about it next time. Thank you so much for being here. I haven't mentioned lately all the other things on the website. I won't do all of that, I guess, but we do have a lot of great men on this website, preachers whose works that I have read, whose lives I have read. I do have hundreds of North Korea audios. I have studies on Islam, studies in about Muhammad himself, the Quran. I have over 60 titles now that you can check just by looking at clicking on store. Blog, I have a blog there every day. It's not always different, but if you look back, you'll see some interesting writings, I think. We have a Zoom meeting still every Saturday night, 7 o'clock Central Time, for men only. Just send me an email, man, about your interest in that Zoom meeting. I'll be glad to have you come along. How about Facebook? Look me up, Bob Faulkner in Niles, Illinois. And then what else have we got here? The YouTube. There's a thing going on over there, too. Just put my name in there and subscribe. Some hand-picked sermons from Sermon Audio are there. Well, anyway, that's it for this time. And this is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we'll get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.